It's time for the BallQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the General's quarters every week, right here on BallQuest.
Hey, good Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome to the BallQuest Mailbag Podcast. I'm Eric Kane, alongside Austin Price, Grant Ramey, and Brent Hubbs. Exterior Home Solutions is the presenting sponsor of the show. Local and trusted since 1999. That phone number, if you have a need for roofing, garage, siding, windows, whatever that case may be, an estimate free at 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. All right, we got plenty of questions that were submitted, so we thank you for that. We're going to try to work through as many as we can. We'll start with All Orange 07. Would UT consider going to silent counts and play calls communications this week in practice and in the game to get more practice ahead of next week's night game in Athens? That'll be in a crazy environment. The offense will certainly hasn't performed well on the road in hostile environments under Josh Heupel. Austin.
You know, I don't know. I would think that they would be trying to do something like that. I would advocate, instead of doing practices at, you know, the practice field where the sound doesn't stay in, I would pipe in crowd noise. I would take everything and practice at the stadium next week, and I would pipe in crowd noise because I think the noise would stay in there. It would be a little louder. You'd get a better feel for it. That's what I would do. Now, I'm sure they'll just go to the practice field, but, like, I just don't think you get a true simulation of the crowd noise to work on such things that you're talking about and that the poster was talking about on the practice field, because I just don't think it gets loud enough.
Or the indoor. I think you could –
You could do it in there as well. That's absolutely
a pretty
correct.
Similar noise indoor. Yeah. But I would
suck for the employees that you know.
That's true.
It'd be like, it's so bad.
I would, regardless. You start it this week, right?
Yeah,
just start
I agree.
The preparation because there's it doesn't hurt you to you're not missing anything. It's not like you're looking forward. You're just working with noise.
Yeah, nothing's. You're not taking anything away from Mississippi State prep if you practice the crowd noise this week for sure. Run cross country, given how routinely head scratching calls are made by SEC officials each week, do you foresee the conference commissioner ever employing full-time officials? How bad must officiating routinely get to have this seriously discussed at the conference level?
It would have to be pretty egregious because, and I know fans probably think it probably already is, but like they've been missing calls for not just this year, not just last year, for several years, and they've not done anything about that on the whole. So I get the frustration of fans for all teams. It's not just a Tennessee thing. I mean, they miss calls for everybody every week.
And it's the National Football League. I don't think the National Football League has full-time officials. I think it's kind of a rarity for an NFL official for that to be his only job. And I mean, there was stuff this past week where there's three different shots to the head and you got three different calls on the defensive back or the defensive player on those play. And if that's happening in the NFL where you're printing your own money and they run the sports world and, you know, they got more money, they don't know what to do with. I don't know how the college game is going to fix their officiating problem. If the NFL's got a problem, everybody's going to have a problem.
Additionally, how egregious must an officials or a set of officials calls, bad calls be to receive suspensions or firings? I would assume Austin, it's an accumulation. It's like a check system. Like you got to check here, you got to check here, three checks, and you get suspended for a game. I mean, that's happened before. It doesn't happen often, but it's certainly happened before where a crew or an official is suspended for a game or two.
Know about it. They don't publicize it. They don't publicize if there's a suspension or anything happens to an official with internal punishment. So you just may not see that official, you know. But, I mean, how many times – I mean, it's not like basketball. Everybody knows who Doug Shals and Teddy Valentine, all those – do you know any of the SEC football officials? You don't. They got a hat on. They bounce around each week. You may see them two games in a row. You may not see them for 10 games. And so, like, it's just – it's not the same. It's easier to hide, you know, suspending an official or whatever, or even letting go of an official than it is in other sports.
Well, Tennessee fans know the white hat for the Alabama game and the Kentucky game because he was back-to-back
there. Game. There was one officiating suspension or whatever that I remember from basketball 2019, that LSU game in Baton Rouge. And I don't know if it was technically a suspension, but I can't even remember the guy's name off the top of my head. Tennessee fans would remember in the blink of an eye, but he didn't get any.
They found him on the social media.
Yeah, was it that guy that was wearing the LSU shirt?
It was all – there's a bunch of drama around it. He didn't have any more Tennessee games that I remember after that.
Did he have any LSU games?
That's a great question.
Yeah, hopefully not. Also, if you if you're the SEC, why on earth would you publicize suspending one of your officials?
That's true.
Like, you want to keep that under wraps. Jalen Smith earlier this year, he couldn't cover me in pass coverage, but in the past couple of games, he's been getting better positive feedback on his play. How well do you think he has improved? And is he going to be more of, is he going to get into more of T-Lander's minutes? Grant, I looked at the snap counts. I know you put those out there every Sunday. It was, T-Lander like 37 snaps, Smith 33 snaps. I mean, they, and Austin and I were talking about this just earlier this week. I mean, they're playing a true rotation. Like, it's not that Smith is taking any of T-Lander's snaps, but they are truly rotating, and Smith is playing as much as he's ever played right now, and that's going to continue on. He, I wouldn't say that he played a flawless game by any stretch of the imagination, but a little bit productive. He had 9 tackles. That was second on the team against Kentucky.
He doesn't stand out on the field, and I think that's an improvement, because when he was first getting out there, it felt like everybody was attacking him and targeting him. And now the fact that you kind of don't notice him as much, I think that's progress. I mean, it's what William Inge said Tuesday, that experience is the best teacher, and when you don't have Keenan Peele, all these other guys got to grow up fast, and it feels like they're progressing pretty quickly.
Which goes back, Hubber, to the experience part. I mean, the kid just didn't have any. I mean, like, it's kind of like Nico. I mean, you know, Nico played much better, you know, against Kentucky than he did at any point the last several games, and it just goes back to getting more reps and getting more repetition. With Jalen Smith, I mean, he didn't really play last year. I don't count any of the nonsense games, and you know, all of a sudden he was playing in a healthy rotation this year, which had to be probably eye-opening for him.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think when you look at it, it's one of those things where you can't replace, you can't substitute experience. I mean, you know, and I talked to Jalen Smith earlier this week, and, you know, he admitted, like, yeah, I studied, I watched film, and I did what I was supposed to do in meetings and was ready, but it's different when you know you're going to be in the rotation in the first half compared to being – you might get to play if it's mop up duty time and you're going to play some special teams, because in terms of prepping as a linebacker, you know, you think you're ready, and then you go out there and you go, you know what, I need to study more. And so I think what he's figured out since Keenan Peely's injury is, hey, I'm going to play and I need to learn and I need to study more and I need to lean on my veteran teammates more. And so I think that's something that he's been much more intentional about his preparation than he was prior to the Peely injury.
Tony underscore Soprano wants to know, how do you feel about the Vols ranking by the College Football Playoff Committee? Any big surprises? Grant, Tennessee was ranked number 7, seeded 8th. And I think that, not that we forgot, but it's literally the first time we're seeing it. It's that, remember, highest 4 ranked conference champions got to be the first 4. So you have Ohio State that's number 2, yet the 5th seed. And you have BYU that's like 9, yet the 4th seed. So that kind of shuffles everybody down. So Tennessee's ranked 7th, seeded 8th in this first college football playoff, would be hosting Indiana, who's the 8-9. I thought that was a really good ranking for Tennessee, Grant. I mean, that was about as high as I thought Tennessee would go.
I thought it was a really good starting point. I was kind of surprised Tennessee was that high. I was kind of surprised they were in front of Indiana. I was kind of surprised to hear Ward Manuel on the conference call after saying when they evaluated Penn State, they looked at Ohio State game as kind of back and forth. I felt that looked, I know it was a one possession game and it was pretty close, but that one felt a little bit more one-sided than back and forth the way Ohio State handled them at Penn State. So that was kind of surprising too, but I mean, more than anything, it's a good starting point. Hubs, I don't know where you expected them to show up, but to be projected to host in the first round at this point kind of surprised me a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I think you said it best, and I think AP probably agrees. I mean, good starting point, but listen, this is a, they need to talk about this for the next 4 or 5 weeks, right? So you got to have some movement. So what was the narrative in week one? It was about your losses. Did you have a good loss, right? Or did you have a bad loss? And so losing at Alabama for Georgia was not as bad of a loss. Ohio State losing at Oregon is not a bad loss. Now, what's interesting is it feels like Texas get a lot of credit for Michigan beating Michigan, who's not very good, but it's a road win. And then Penn State did not seem to get as much punishment for what I would consider to be a tough loss because of how that game went. So what's the narrative next week? Is the narrative next week about quality wins? You know, is it about schedule strength? I mean, what are we talking about next week? Because there's going to be kind of a new storyline each week with this deal outside of just the elimination games, Austin, because they got to have something to talk about for the next month.
You're exactly right. There's going to be a lot of movement. If you're a Tennessee fan, you're likely to end up mad at some point or disagree pretty hard with it. At the end of the day, you really shouldn't care. You just want to be in the tournament. Be in the tournament, you know, at the end of the month. And, you know, I think if Tennessee goes down to Athens, they win, obviously Tennessee's, you know, right in their own ticket at that point. But if they lose, you know, just be competitive. Be competitive. I mean, Alabama is in there as a two-loss team. You beat Alabama. You know, but it doesn't hurt, though. Like, you talk about the Michigan-Texas thing. I think that can actually, you know, that can look better for Texas, and it can also help Tennessee if Michigan beats Indiana this week. You know, I mean, you know, win that game. You know, and because I think at that point, you know, you start to shuffle Indiana back out, and the Big Ten looks like a three-team league, which ultimately helps everybody in the SEC. So, yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I think that, you know, for Tennessee, this is a great starting point. But you just got to go out and play football and win football games and be competitive if you were to drop one like at Georgia. But at the end of the day, this is going to come down to beating Vanderbilt at the end to get to 10 wins or 11, depending on what happens next week in Athens.
Four teams from the SEC, four teams from the Big Ten, one from ACC, one from Big 12. Any surprises about 4-4 from the two big conference right now?
I think a little bit for me. You know, I do think last week, though, it helped because Clemson lost. I think Alabama would have been out and Clemson would have been in. But that helped Alabama. That helped Alabama, Clemson losing. Again, if you're Tennessee, like the perfect scenario here, you know, or even a Big Ten team like Indiana, the perfect scenario here is Notre Dame losing to Army next week. You know, or USC to round out the year. Because if the ACC ends up as a one-team league, the Big 12 ends up as a one-team league, and then you have no Notre Dame, that opens up all those SEC teams that could have two losses. So, like, that's what you're wanting if you're an SEC team with two losses.
Hey, on the college football playoff note, C.S. Giles wants to know, are these playoff projections based off current results, or do they take into account likely wins and losses based on future games? For example, Tennessee is projected as an 8 seed. Is this assuming they lose to Georgia and Athens and win the remaining games, or is that projecting, that's projecting Tennessee wins out?
It's where you are today.
It's body of work. It's body of work.
Yeah, it's 7-1, and we'll see what it looks like next week if Tennessee's 8-1, and you know everything else. So no, there's no projection there. It's all about what you've done to this point. Which again, it's why everybody's intrigued by watching every Tuesday night because it's going to change every week.
Tech Ball says, are there any parameters when it comes to in-helmet communication for the quarterback? For instance, can Coach Josh Heupel tell Nico what he's seeing from the defense alignment when they get to the ball early in the play clock, or coach is only permitted to give the play call?
No, you have a certain amount of time. It cuts off with how much time left on the play clock? Like 10 seconds?
15, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, it's 15.
You know, so I mean, like, you can do whatever you want to up to that point. You can sing, and you can, you know, tell you how you make, you know, apple butter or whatever you want to say. They're not permitted to just the play call. You can, you know, so you can talk about, you know, what the defensive line's doing, what the safety's doing, any of that stuff before, you know, it shuts off.
You can tell them you're eating ice cream cones like Harry Hogg told Cole Trickle.
And when Tennessee's going tempo,
Jonathan Kongbo.
When Tennessee's going tempo, you don't have time to say pretty much anything at all, right? I mean, you're going.
Do they go tempo anymore?
Not like they used to.
They try to. You know, I think the challenge is, and I think this is obviously something that coaches have dealt with all year long, and I think it gets probably a little harder as the season goes along. But wouldn't you think, like, first week, you're like, okay, I'm just going to give you a little nugget here. You know, watch a high low or watch this, and then you get to like week 7, week 8, you're like, hey, you got slant to the right. If the safety rocks down, you've got this, or and all of a sudden you're cluttering him. I mean, Eric, I think we were talking about this on the rewind. I love that reel with Matthew Stafford where he tries to get in the huddle to make a play call. He's like, Sean McVay will not stop talking. He will not. Hold on. Wait a minute.
oh, he's still talking. And it's like sometimes you can be, you know, you can say too much. And I think Tennessee certainly tried to, and every school and college has tried to minimize how much they speak. But you can speak up until there's 15 seconds left.
CN31, looking back at the Arkansas loss on our resume, do you think people really overlooked the potential impact that Arkansas had a number of people with deep knowledge of both our offense and defense? Pittman had Browse as OC for years, Nichols and Slaughter 3 years of the program, Travis Williams was on UCF staff whenever Heupel left. Austin, I think at the end of the day, Tennessee just played a bad football game. That stuff can't hurt, but Tennessee lost that game because Tennessee played like crap.
Yep, that's right. I think they went into it feeling a little bit too big for their britches, and you know, I think the defense, they were there. I mean, you know, were they perfect? No. But, I mean, again, you held Arkansas to under 20. I mean, that should be good enough, right? I mean, that should be good enough. But it wasn't. And so, you know, your lesson learned. You had a young quarterback. He didn't play great. You know, receivers didn't help him. And, you know, we said after the game, what did we say? We said this game is going to rear its ugly head every week. The only time it doesn't rear its ugly head is if Arkansas wins. And so every time Arkansas loses, you know, you're just going to go, how did they lose to them?
Not only loses, but gets beat 34-10 at home by LSU and gets 60 hung on them by Ole Miss or whatever the final score of that game was.
Yeah, I mean, remember, midway through the third quarter, you led 14-3.
Yep.
If Arkansas had all the answers, then I guess Florida had all the first half answers because you didn't score. You know, Alabama had all the first half answers because you only put up 3 points. I mean, you just didn't finish, and it was about execution. You didn't deliver, and maybe it was lackadaisical in practice. Maybe it was guys not ready. Maybe it was a wake-up call, whatever. The bottom line is you didn't play 60 minutes of football out there, and you walked away with a loss that is going to be the loss everybody's talking about for the next 3 weeks.
Unless
you go to Athens next week.
Yeah. It's the only way to erase it. You erase it totally. And I guess some people are going to say, well, but at that point, again, taking a one loss 10 weeks into the year, you're taking a one loss record and you're thrilled with it no matter what.
Grant, Forever Faithful, wants to know which former ball would have thrived under Barnes?
The one guy that I always think about or go back to actually played for Rick for one season, Armani Moore, because he was super versatile. He could be a small ball four. He could play the five. He could play the point guard. He was just a really good basketball player. And those guys under Rick seemed to play really well. Kevin Punter was another guy that got 1 year with Rick. If he had 2 or 3 years with him, I think he would have been spectacular. Josh Richardson, obviously the defense he played, the offense that he's developed. I mean, he's a really, really talented basketball player, and you've seen it in the NBA. All these years later, but any of those guys would have starred under Barnes.
What about a Chris Lofton? Would he have been good?
Yes. Okay. If you can shoot it, you're good.
Yeah. I'll tell you a guy who I would put in there is C.J. Watson.
I would
really like to. I think he would, as a point guard, when you look at what Rick does and ask his point guards to do, C.J. Watson is a really good basketball player. Would have liked to have seen him under Rick Barnes. That could have been fun.
Brent, bonus question. Who would have been better under Barnes? C.J. Black, Isaiah Victor, or Brandon Crump? Go.
From a talent standpoint, Isaiah Victor could have done a bunch of different things for you because you could stretch him out and do some things. But the question with all three of those guys would be kind of their focus. C.J. Black was a good defender. You know, he had some limitations offensively. He was a good defender. I like that Grant's not participating in this.
I was in middle school, grade school. I don't know.
Exactly. Thanks. Wonderful. Who was your third one? Brandon Crump.
Brandon Crump.
I would take Victor, Black, and then probably Crump.
My answer would be whoever could handle getting absolutely destroyed on the practice floor every single day.
Which would have been a challenge for Victor.
What about Lang Wiseman?
Could shoot the three ball. Had some defensive limitations. But
what about Doug Roth?
Double birds?
What about Steve Ray in the way?
I don't remember Steve Ray in the way.
How is this the question that got off the rails?
That one's too much for me.
Nick wants to know, do conference title and playoff games count towards the games played for red shirts? If I recall, bowl games didn't count. No, those games do not count. Chad Aval says, do we expect to see more Peyton Lewis snaps going forward, or was that strictly a Dylan Sampson in the doghouse situation? Again, I don't think he fumbled. I don't think he was in the doghouse, Brent. I think they had Bishop in for his series. Bishop got hurt. They threw Sampson back out there. Then the next time they're on offense, they went with a true, you know, backup rep there to give Sampson a break. But depending on health for Deshaun Bishop, I think he's going to be okay long term. But for this week, I could easily see some more Peyton Lewis.
Yeah, I mean, I think this week you're absolutely going to play Peyton Lewis. I don't think you play Deshaun Bishop. Even if Deshaun Bishop says he's good to go, I don't play Deshaun Bishop, because I need Deshaun Bishop, if I'm Tennessee, to be 100% at Georgia, because I'm more comfortable with Deshaun Bishop on the road in the SEC than I am with where Peyton Lewis is right now. That's not a knock on Peyton Lewis. That's just what we were talking about earlier with Jalen Smith. Lewis just doesn't have that much experience. So I want to do everything this week and practice field next week to make sure I've got Deshaun Bishop healthy enough to be in my rotation with Dylan Sampson in Athens, Georgia. So I'm playing Peyton Lewis this week.
Another question here from the poster, looking ahead, because we're allowed to do that. What are some of the vulnerabilities with this Georgia team that you expect Heupel and Co. to try to exploit? Grant, let's start with the quarterback. He's turned the football over a ton here lately. I say, you know, force him into bad decisions and go pick that football off. And they're turning the football over a little bit there in Athens.
Yeah, it feels like Carson Beck hasn't kind of been what we've seen, what he can be, I guess, at times. I think what maybe feels different about this matchup in the past is this Tennessee defense and how well they've played, and just the front seven and how deep they are and the success they've had up front. I mean, defense travels. It's obviously going to be tough to travel to Georgia and win that football game. But I think if you have that starting point, that elite defense, I think it gives you a little bit more of a chance to stick around.
I think for me, for Tennessee to win next week, one, they got to continue to progress this week. Nico's got to back up what he did last week with another good performance against Mississippi State. But I think this feels like a game where special teams, Tennessee has to win. Like, I think you need, one, to not turn it over, to punt the ball away, because at times you're not going to score and you're going to have to punt. And I think Jackson Ross has to have a really good football game. And I know that sounds silly because you're talking about, you know, the punter and not like, you know, the quarterback or whatever. But like, I think it's important that Tennessee doesn't turn the football over, which means punts are going to happen in this football game at Georgia next week. The worst case scenario for Tennessee is turning it over, short fields, you know, for Georgia, because I do think your defense will travel. I do think your defense will do well, but you know, if you give Georgia 20 yards, like if you do what you did at Oklahoma a couple of times, which is turn it over, you know, and give them 20 or 30 yards, you're likely not getting the ball back on turnovers back like Oklahoma did.
Well, I don't know that you'll ever see that happen again. I mean, in any college football game, that was the craziest thing ever. But I agree with your point. I think the other thing, Eric, and maybe you disagree with this, it feels like right now, going into next week, as we look ahead, that this is the first time Tennessee will have played Georgia, and you don't feel like you have to try to turn this into a shootout and you got to score all the time. You know, I mean, you got to score fast. You got to score early. It feels like this could be, you know, I don't want to call it a rock fight, but this could be a 60-minute game where it's about defense and who can make a play or two versus, man, Tennessee's going to have to, you know, they got to make a bunch of plays to have a chance to win this game, because you got to score a bunch of points. It doesn't feel like that's the case right now.
No, certainly not. You can dial it back, play a little 90s football, play good defense, run the football, make some plays. When you get down in the red area, and I know, you know, you and I kind of worked on a story this week about that, you got to convert, you got to be efficient. But certainly, I mean, the way, you know, Georgia's playing offensively, turning the football over, the way Tennessee is playing elite defense, absolutely, I think it can be that type of football game. And you just kind of line up and go play. I think you make a great point. Like in years past, even in 2022, like even when you had this offense going the way you wanted to, it's like, I mean, you gotta come out there and, you know, score early to take some, you know, take the wind out of the crowd, right? You know, quiet that crowd down a little bit and all that type of stuff. I mean, you'd love to do that, don't get me wrong, but I don't think that that's as big of a focal point now, you know, with this defense where you're at.
Well, and the question is, can they run the football against Georgia, which they've not been able to do under Josh Heupel. I mean, Georgia, because Georgia's been really good defensively, Tennessee has not been effective running the football other than one long run by Jalen Wright to open the game last year. They've really not been a factor at all running the football against them. So can they do that?
Yep. History so far under Josh Heupel, Tennessee struggled to run the football against Florida, Alabama, and Georgia. Tennessee has since run the football against Florida and Alabama. Georgia is next, and we'll see if they can do that this week or in 2 weeks, excuse me. We got plenty more questions to get into, but first, let's get a word from our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions.
Get Neyland loud this football season with Exterior Home Solutions, East Tennessee's first choice for exterior renovations.
Exterior Home Solutions, that phone number is 865-524-5888, online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Jump back into the questions. We'll go to Big Old Balls 28. Do you think the receivers have underperformed as badly as it seemed over the past two seasons, or is there just way too much hype around them in preseason? This is a good question, Austin, because, you know, I definitely have. I know we have a little bit, you know, talked about the receivers a lot in preseason. You know, Dante Thornton last year, Chris Brazel this year, even Ramel Keaton at points in time last year. Receivers have not been great each of the last 2 years, but also, I mean, you know, quarterback had something to do with that a little bit both years. Joe last year and at points in time, Nico this year for sure. To the poster's point, like that position overall has not been where it needs to be, in my opinion, each of the past two seasons.
Well, and they're compared to 2022. They're compared to Jalen Hyatt just running routes on air out there. Like, ridiculous. And, you know, and Cedric Tillman big bodying up, making big boy catches. So, yeah, I mean, you know, there have been spurts and times where they flashed this year, just like there was a lot of times last year. But they've not been consistent enough. The quarterbacks haven't helped them in some games, and they've not helped the quarterbacks in others. So, you know, I mean, you know, have we built them up too much? I mean, maybe. I mean, I can get roll with that. Individuals, anyways. I wouldn't say the entire group. But you know, I think again, I'm just not ready to. I know we're, you know, 8 games in, but I'm just not ready to just label the entire group, you know, a certain way, just like I'm not ready to label the offense a certain way. Not yet. Maybe after this week, though.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Grant, when you – part of this is – I mean, some of this is on the offensive staff for, you know, giving some gold jackets out in two-a-days when they meet the media. I certainly thought Chris Brazel would have a big impact. He's not had the impact that I thought he would have. They've just been inconsistent, but – you know, some of it is a product of hype, right? I mean, Mike Matthews, he has a touchdown catch in every scrimmage and looks great in the orange and white game. And every week, hey, he's ready to go. And then, no, there's not a whole lot there. So, yeah, I mean, part of it's on probably me for overhyping some guys, but this group's got to play better, bottom line.
I mean, I think your hype is based on people you talk to and what coaches say in press conferences. I mean, coaches kind of can't win because you have Joey Halsley last summer talking about Dante Thornton and how great he was and all this stuff, and it never really panned out. You also don't want a coach to just get up there and just be boring and dry, which is that's the other alternative. Like, which way do you want to go? You want to be boring? Or, right. Or was it Pruitt that would never even say a kid's name for a lot of press conferences?
No. That was like that first year. He was like that.
He would say Carlin Phil-Aimé, and he would say
Jabari Smalls. I'm not talking about pronunciations. You just wouldn't say a player's name when you asked about people.
I mean, his first year, certainly through that spring, he didn't say anybody's name. For sure.
And so you don't.
Your point, Grant, is right. I mean, where's the balance?
Right. You don't want to be over your skis in terms of trying to describe what Dante Thornton's going to do his first year at Tennessee, and you also don't want to be, you know, dry as what was it, wallpaper paste.
Yeah. You also want to be better than 8 minutes of absolute garbage and nothing, but you don't want to be 65 minutes of oh my gosh, Brent Venable, shut up.
Pruitt went that first year where he didn't mention anybody by name, and then got into the signing day press conference and went, was it Jackie Sherrill who just like started going down the roster of like, you know, of the player, their hometown. It was like total opposite.
Oh, what's funny, we were talking about this a moment ago. White_Fort_Vol. What does the VolQuest staff bunk on trips look like? Who are roommates? Normally, AP and I travel together. When we travel with Grant rents a car, and he's the dad of the trip, and he drives everywhere and gets our hotel room. We're all good to go. But usually, it's a combination of the three of us. Matt travels by himself, and Hubs travels by himself. So, yeah, that's kind of what it looks like.
It's very glamorous. Glamorous operation.
It is indeed that. Exciting stuff. For sure. That's what everybody needs to know today. Sometimes at 3 a.m, you're not really bunking with anybody. You're just kind of, you're just sitting there in a chair for about 90 minutes and then you're heading back out the door.
Right. That's in 2024, the season of the night game, there's no bunking. It's just take a shower and get an Uber and go to the airport.
Grant and I drove back from, from Norman one time, went straight to the airport. So actually, I dropped him off at the airport. I went back, took a shower, and then I caught a later flight. So yeah, that's how that's been. Wrong-handed. Does JP make threes in practice? Thought the scout on him out of high school was that he could shoot it a little bit.
I think he can shoot it. I think you shooting it at the high school level and shooting at the college level are just two different things. You're facing two different levels of defense and athleticism and size. I mean, everybody kind of can step out and shoot it in AAU ball in high school because you're one of the best players on the court. I think he does have some touch, and I don't think Rick would mind him stepping out and shooting it some, but first he's got to get on the floor and stay on the floor and kind of ramp up and be healthy and play considerable minutes and play a bigger part before you can kind of expand that part of your game. So I wouldn't rule it out, but I don't think it's coming anytime soon.
We'll go to the next poster. That is DCEU 1470. It seems like we had a top 50 baseball recruit every single week with all the new additions. How did Tennessee's recruiting classes 25 and 26 stack up against the rest of the SEC? And how do you compare with the recruiting classes in the past under Tony Vitello? Right now, Tennessee in 2025 is ranked number 4 behind LSU, Texas, and Arkansas. In 2026, Tennessee is number 2 behind Texas. And in terms of Tony Vitello's past, I looked at this earlier in the week. I mean, it's night and day from when he got here. Like, his first, like, two cycles, I guess that would have been 2018 and 19, they were like 8th, 7th, like top 10, but kind of down there a little bit. And then, like, as soon as 19, 20, 21 hits, he's like 4, 5, 3, 6, 5. I mean, he's right up there, but it's the same teams every year, right? LSU, Arkansas, Vanderbilt's up there every now and again, Tennessee now, Texas. I mean, it's all those teams kind of jockeying for position.
Yeah, but what percentages do you give for a top three class, Eric? What percentages?
Top three class, high percentage, especially after Tennessee just got another, earlier this week, top 50.
After Tony won a title, it feels like he's drafting, does it not? Like, he's just getting whoever he wants.
It's very much... Yeah, it's very much whatever Tony wants.
It's trending that direction.
Above 80% for top three class?
Yeah, I'll go. I'm not going to clarify which 25 or 26 cycle, but yeah, I'll go above
80%. 86.7%.
Who are their key targets in 29?
God.
See? Feel my pain.
Couldn't tell you. At least I laugh. I asked you about 27s back in the summer, and you're like, oh, my God. Sam Smith, 22-33. Ramey, what is the scout on Pat Kelsey and the Cards?
Top 60 KenPom team. They are portal all-stars, like all these teams are that have coaching changes where you got to come in and just build a roster basically.
Huntley Hapnell still there?
Huh? He is at North Carolina State. He went there to chase another Final Four with the Wolfpack.
What a shocker.
Terrence Edwards out of James Madison was a guy that Tennessee kind of had some interest in the portal. Pat Kelsey got him at Louisville. Chucky Hepburn, Tennessee fans might remember him from Wisconsin. They played him last year. He's at Louisville now. You basically go down the roster and just click on every single name, and they come from somewhere else, Long Beach, Washington, whatever. I mean, that's what you got to do to build a roster. But, I mean, he knows what he's doing. He's going to be way better than Kenny Payne ever was. He's probably done more at Louisville in one game than Kenny Payne did at Louisville in however many years he was there. They killed Morehead State the other night. That's going to be a really tough game to win. I think KenPom has it as a one-point game. So going on the road early in the season, Saturday noon game, that's going to be a really tough test. Pat Kelsey knows what he's doing. That one's going to be difficult.
And Grant will be the only person that's watched that kid play at Wisconsin and at Louisville in back-to-back years.
That was a great trip last year. Tennessee needs that kind of performance again.
Well, just make sure this time. Actually, you know what? You're not allowed to come to the football game afterwards. You went to Wisconsin, then came to Missouri last year. That didn't play out too well.
No, I didn't go. Man. I went home.
Then you got to be there.
Kentucky football game, driving through the middle of the night, going to the Michigan State exhibition. But Kinect went off for the first time ever in a Tennessee uniform.
Hey, this week is nothing compared to Georgia, 7:30 in Athens, and then turn around 3 o'clock Austin Peay at Thompson Bowling Arena Sunday afternoon for Lord knows only knows why.
Yeah, it's not gonna be fun.
Welcome to London.
Yep.
Big Orange Crush, how many high school players can we sign this year, Austin?
As many as they want, pal. Just take them all.
You got to stay under the number. It's not there is no number year to year. You just got to stay under the overall number, which is going to go to 105, right?
Well, that's
what we think.
That's what everybody thinks. So
everybody's running for right now.
You know, may have to run a few off if it doesn't change. They lose so many bodies, though, right? I mean, like
they got plenty of room. Yeah. They don't have a numbers issue.
Yeah.
Stump Jumper. If Samson continues at his current average, he'll have 1,500 yards and 29 touchdowns. How will he be viewed in terms of historical UT running backs, consider the records he's setting?
It'll be the best season in Tennessee football history. It already is from a rushing touchdowns perspective. He's on pace to break the 1,364 by Travis Stevens. You know, we'll see if he gets that done. But, yeah, I mean, you know, and honestly, like, if he came back, he'd have a chance to break Travis Henry's, you know, rushing record. I don't think he'll probably come back, but, you know, you never know. I mean, you just never know.
I mean, he's pacing right now, whatever, 29 touchdowns. That's in 12 games. They're not just going to play 12 games. And to put that into context, I mean, the career Tennessee rushing record is like 35 for rushing touchdowns, or 37. I can't remember which one. It's one of those two numbers. You're talking about in a single season almost hitting that number. Like, I don't know where he falls in terms of, you know, the greats of all time at Tennessee at running back, but just the insane number of touchdowns he's scored. He's basically got one touchdown per game, and he's only scored touchdowns in basically half his career games. That's how many times he's scored multiple touchdowns in games.
Pine wants to know, if Nick Saban or Kirby Smart's name was on this team, would they be ranked or thought of higher by the media fans committee? To me, this seems like one of their championship caliber teams. Incredible defense, running back leading SEC in rushing, Heupel being an offensive-minded coach, hurting his team's eye test, as the committee likes to call it.
I don't think so.
I don't think being ranked number seven is all that disrespectful for this team.
I think
people are struggling to figure out why they're a defense first and can't score in the first half and playing Florida at overtime and down a half against Kentucky at home. I think you're trying to figure out that part of it because you're just so used to Heupel's offense, but I don't think being number seven is being disrespected. They're just figuring it out.
I think it's a compliment, Grant, because, I mean, like, what about this offense makes you think number seven in the country?
Right.
To this point, you know. So I think it's a compliment to the defense that they are ranked as high as they are.
Well, I will say this. I mean, if it were given the love affair for Nick Saban, it'd probably be talked about differently because it was a Nick Saban deal. But I don't think that's a fair assessment to anything because that's not realistic. The bottom line is Tennessee's not been good enough offensively. They got to be better, but their defense is at a playoff caliber, championship level defense at this point.
I think if Tennessee had two losses and one of those was Vanderbilt, they wouldn't be the number 11 seed in the bracket on the first Tuesday night, because I think that's a little bit more of a Alabama kind of whatever program, you know, reverence a little bit. I mean, but you know, this team is kind of ranked where it should be. If Nick Saban had a bad loss at Arkansas, I think people would hold him accountable for a bad loss at Arkansas.
I would appreciate the staff's honest assessment of the red zone play calling on offense, acknowledging the obvious self-inflicting wounds like turnovers, penalties, all that. It still seems like the staff hasn't given this team much success with the calls in the red zone. Thoughts?
In the passing game, we'll have a red zone story later this week. I mean, when they get inside the 10, Tennessee's really good at finishing drives and scoring touchdowns. The problem is they haven't created enough plays when they need to make a play to keep a drive in the red zone alive, whether it's a first down or a touchdown between the 11 and the 20-yard line. You know, they haven't thrown a fade, right, in the back of the end zone. They've got some stuff with the tight ends, but I thought Brew McCoy would be a better red zone weapon because of his size.
I thought Nico's legs would be a better red zone weapon.
I mean, I thought
the bowl game too. Difference.
Yeah, I thought they would be. I thought they would be better than what they've been. I thought they'd be a little bit more creative in the red zone than what we've seen to this point.
Yeah, I wish they would roll Nico. I mean, they're trying to do a good job of getting Nico out of the pocket in general, and I think that's good because he's comfortable out there. But like in the red zone, you know, roll that out. Give him a little bit of an option. Against Iowa, that's a great point, Austin. I mean, they schemed it up to where they had a straight quarterback power. Running back was the lead blocker. That was a good-looking play. When you're at the 15, run it. Like run that football play.
As soon as you get inside the 20, bring out the defensive lineman. We're going to run it. You're going to have to stop us, whatever that heavy set's called, bring it on.
But again, that story that we're going to have up on the site, it's eye-popping how successful they are when they get to the 10. Hubs went and found all these stats. When they get inside the 10, it's incredible the amount of success Tennessee's offense is having, Dylan Sampson's having, and then from 11 to 20, it's like it's that 10-yard marker. That's the money marker. You got to get to 10, not 20. You got to get to 10, and then you're like, okay, well, now we can score. All right, let's go to 1987 Vols, seems like on offense we play with good pace until we reach the red zone, and then we get more deliberate. Why is that, and could we be a part of our own problem in the red zone? Tempo. Why no more tempo in the red zone?
Well, a couple of times they've got to the red zone, and there's a defensive line injury or a linebacker injury,
yeah,
or a secondary injury. There's times they've wanted to go fast. I mean, you go back to that Oklahoma game, they hit the deep ball to Brew McCoy, Tennessee sprints to the line of scrimmage, and DJ Terry, I think it's DJ Terry, DeJon Terry was on the field and had to be helped off the field. And that's happened multiple times to Tennessee in the red zone. That slows down tempo a little bit when you have that happen. I think they want to go fast at times. Then there are other times where they're trying to get the right scheme and the right matchup, Grant. And, you know, they've gotten it a couple times. I mean, the lack of tempo in the Chris Braswell touchdown against Alabama was a win for Tennessee because they shifted him and moved him inside to the slot. And then they throw that fade to him, and they wanted him in that position to throw that pass specifically to him. If you're going tempo there, you don't get that look. So there's pluses and minuses to it.
I think go tempo if you can get lined up and everybody's set and you're not covering anybody up, and you can't make those kind of fatal flaws. If you can go fast.
I think last week I said it after the game, they went so fast on that one play that they didn't have time to even realize anybody was covered up. And I think that the tempo got them on that instance.
And that's the second time it's happened this season.
Let's get the two more questions. There's, I guess, technically a couple more than two, but posters. There we go. Crayon says, chances the coaching staff looks the same going into 2025. I'd say that's probably slim. Wouldn't you, Brent Hubbs?
I don't know. I mean, Tim Banks' name is going to show up on job opportunities out there. How interested is he? What type of job is he looking for? Who all comes after him? Is it just for head coaching jobs? Does somebody come after him and offer him a boatload of money to be the defensive coordinator? You got Willie Martinez on an expiring contract. Mike Heckler's contract is up for renewal in January. So,
you just play the odds. Typically, coaching staffs don't stay intact.
You would think that, but then, I mean, this one has. Even when somebody's left, they've promoted from within. It's been the same people. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, but yeah, playing the odds, you would say there's going to be some staff turnover, but we'll see.
Grant, what matchup in round one of the college football playoffs will be the most favorable for Tennessee? I like Tennessee against Indiana the way it's projected right now, but obviously you'd love to get that 5-12, right? Against likely a group of five, you know what I'm saying? That would be a really, really nice, you know, matchup for Tennessee.
Yeah, I think Boise State might be able to spoil the group of five is automatically going to be number 12. I think for Tennessee, less important than matchup, man, if you could find a way to get a home game as good as they've been at home, as elite as that home field advantage is in a regular season game, I could not imagine a December playoff game at Neyland Stadium. I mean, Boise State, whoever that is, if you could get a home game, Indiana, Penn State, Notre Dame, whatever, that would be a huge difference.
Could the university be doing more PR for Sampson and a Heisman campaign? Well, there's no PR. I mean, it's not like they're doing a bad job. But there's no Heisman.
They couldn't do
PR.
Less. They need a Heisman. They should have had a Heisman campaign the second he broke the record for single season rushing touchdowns.
It's funny, man, and this is a bigger conversation we don't have time for right now. But you know, according to FanDuel earlier this week, Heisman odds updated going into this week. Samson's got the 14th best odds. Nico's at 16th. Like, why on earth is Nico even on that big board? And why is it Dylan Sampson at 3 or 4? You know what I'm saying?
Because Nico plays quarterback. And no disrespect to the kid at Boise State and the crazy numbers he's putting up, but the numbers Dylan Sampson's putting up against an SEC schedule, and they're not more impressive. Different. I mean, he's got more yardage at Boise State, obviously, but they're not that different.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, and I know we're about out of time here, we got to run, but does anybody do a campaign really anymore? I mean, I know Travis Hunter said on the game day set for ESPN, so I guess
they're definitely campaigning for him.
I mean, that was whatever that campaign was. But I mean, if you're at Boise State, you got to sell the guy. I mean, because not everybody's watching blue turf games at midnight, you know, during the season. But I mean, there's so much out there now. Is anybody doing? And what is a campaign? I mean, a billboard in New York? I mean,
that's a good question. Like,
I mean, what is a campaign anymore?
Look at what Tennessee baseball did with Christian Moore last year at the end of the season. Thought they did. I mean, after every series, they kind of put together some type of montage of Simo doing what he did that past weekend and putting up stats. You know, where does he stack up against, you know, Caglione and you know, Condon and all those? I thought Tennessee's social media team did a great job with Simo last year, especially towards the end of the season. I don't think it's billboards or anything, but it's constant social media presence, constant.
And Tennessee's pretty good at that.
Yeah.
Go back and watch their uniform stuff. They're pretty good at that.
No doubt. That's a good combo I like to come back to, especially, obviously, if Dylan Sampson keeps it up, which I would assume that he will. We're going to end on this one. Mr. Rocky Top Rowdy, who is not about to be a first-time father, says, do you have any advice for first-time fathers?
Go ahead, Hubber.
No, hey, man. And enjoy them while they're young, because as hard as you think it is, with them eating dirt and climbing in a digging in a trash can or whatever, or whatever they're doing.
They all do it out there in Corey.
It's a little different when they're adult kids. So the parenting for older adult kids is a challenge all to its own. So they're a little bit easier. You think when they're a toddler that it's not great, but sometimes toddlers are a lot better than 19, 18, 19-year-olds.
Here's the sports cliche is get comfortable being uncomfortable. The parenting cliche that you're going to hear a billion times, and it's 1,000,000% true, is the days are short and the days are long and the years are short.
They are.
Not being more true.
This isn't a first-time dad advice, but if you're having more than one, I'm short-term pain, long-term gain. Like, you know, don't
spread them out.
Don't spread them out. That's my advice. Now, again, there's some short-term pain, but I think there's some long-term gain.
I think I said the other day to somebody, like, oh, we're just nervous or not scared, but nervous or something. They're like, well, that's going to be your yep. every single day life is nervous.
Stressed out is your new normal for the rest of your life. You're just stressed.
And there, I mean, the reality is there's no book. I mean, it is, you are literally learning as you go. Everybody can give you all the advice you can, but just always be you, you know, and love on them and care for them and let them know that they've always got somebody there that will try to catch them when they fall and help them, you know, in any way that they can, and enjoy every second of it. Cause in all seriousness, you're going to blink and they're going to be driving a car, and then you're going to blink and they're going to be moving out, and then you're going to blink and they're going to be getting married, and you're going to go, what happened?
And that's, there is a book, and I bought it from my wife. It's called There Are Way Worse Moms Than You. And it went over really well, and we were reading it to the kids, and then it started cussing right and left, and we had to get out of that somehow.
Well, when in doubt, don't send your kid to Grant's house to read a book, and send your kid over to Hubs's to eat some dirt.
It's like the old saying, like, what did I marry into? What did I move out here for? You know, kids eat dirt and everything.
Hey, when you live on a farm, man, you have no idea what's going to happen, right? Just the way it is. If you don't think your kid's going to put something outside in his mouth he's not supposed to, then I don't know.
You're in denial. Yeah,
you haven't been outside with your kid. is what I would tell you.
All right. Well, great stuff as always. Appreciate you guys sending in these questions as you do each and every week. There's plenty that we didn't get into, so apologies there. But I worked through about 24 of those, so thank you very much. Austin Price, Grant Ramey, Brent Hubbs, I am Eric Kane. And as always, Exterior Home Solutions, presenting proud sponsor of the show. Local and trusted since 1999. That phone number, 865-524-5888. Online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. We got continual coverage leading up to kickoff for Tennessee and Mississippi State. All that and so much more conversation can be found at VolQuest.com.
You've been listening to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on VolQuest.